Are you tired of working with generic IT providers that rely on you to be the expert? Arc IT goes beyond just fixing your tech headaches. They specialize in proactive IT management, BIM support, and data security for architecture firms. The team at Arc IT gets your tech so you can focus on doing your best work. Whether you're a small firm of 10 or a growing practice with 50 or more employees, unleash the full potential of your creative vision with Arc IT. Visit getarcit.com and schedule your free IT assessment today. Hello, my name is Demetrius. And you are listening to Spaces Podcast Express. Thank you for coming back, everybody. Today we have a guest. So just as a quick introduction, Niall is an architectural designer, a writer, and entrepreneur. Checking in with us from Ireland right now. Former senior editor at Arc Daily, which most people listening probably know this this website. It's pretty much the world's most visited architecture website. So he's written over 850 articles for Arc Daily. So he's very well-versed in writing. And he's on his own now doing a lot of other stuff. So we're checking in with Niall today, see what he's working on. So please help me welcome Niall Patrick Walsh. Niall.
Hey guys.
Niall, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be with you. Greetings from Ireland.
So how is it there right now? Looks like a good, nice day.
Well, nice day is always a relative term here. It's I mean, it's not raining, so that's kind of cool. It's things are good here. As a country, it's starting to open up again. Yeah. After COVID, the bars aren't fully open yet, so that's still regarded as a national crisis. Yeah. But things are returning to normal in daily life, and to a certain extent in the industry as well, I think, over here. Yeah. And in the UK.
Very cool. So outside of your bio, really summarized bio, what do you you want to tell us a little bit more about yourself, what you have going on?
Sure. My kind of predominant, my primary work, as you said, is as an architectural designer for BDP, for Building Design Partnership. So that still takes up most of my day, and all the other kind of shenanigans that I do have always kind of occurred around that space. So whether that was writing for Arc Daily, at the moment I'm involved in a few other ventures. Myself and a colleague run a platform called Bubble Futures Platform. So that's very much about trying to uncover visionary architectural ideas for the future of cities and trying to figure out architecture's connection with global flows, whether that's global flows of food or energy or water and migration and people, and how architects can bring a unique eye to some of those issues and to some of those paradoxes. So I'm doing that. And then also kind of as an offspring from my work with Arc Daily, I run a proofreading, editing, writing service for architects, for universities, et cetera. I'm working on quite a cool publication at the moment, all about the future of the crit. Any architectural students, and it probably sends shivers down their spine when I say that word. But looking at alternative forms of how architectural education can be reviewed, and how we can somehow create an education system that doesn't exert the financial and also the mental health issues that I think are too often associated with architectural education. So we have a group of academics and experts from around Europe who are currently helping us out on that. So I'm doing a bit of design and editing for that. So doing quite a lot of varied things in my time, and entering and designing for competitions as well. A recent one about urban farming that I was happy to be to get first place in. So I think everything I really do at the moment is about this architecture's connection with the wider world. It's, you know, its connection with everyday life, and try to, this idea of kind of progress, about linking architecture with progress in in agriculture, in farming, in education, and in society, and in climate. So that's the long form answer to that.
Yeah, I really think that's sort of the future of architecture, is not chasing the next contract and throttling down in that capacity and putting a foot into more forward thinking and problem solving big issues in the world. And the more that firms and individual architects do that, I think the better off we are at finding meaningful and possible solutions to a lot of the issues that we're facing, because a lot of it does revolve around the built environment.
100%. I mean, the firm I work with, we just had our annual meeting, our kind of annual review, and it was a point that was made a lot, is that we've always tried to focus on several sectors in several parts of the world, and that the one of the most dangerous things you can do, I think, and a lot of people do it very successfully, but I always get a bit nervous about the idea of zoning in too much on a particular sector, or indeed a particular industry or a particular line of work, because as we've seen over the last couple few months, there doesn't seem to be any such thing as a safe job anymore. Unless you manufacture vaccines. But I always think it's one of the unique things about architecture and an architectural education is what you said, problem solving, where we exert a tremendous amount of energy and training examining whether it's a physical site or a financial site or a biological site, any sort of site or context, and finding ways to just make that better, to improve it, to streamline it, or to rip it up and start again. I think it's a unique thing that architects are taught, and sometimes I wonder, do we not reach our full potential when we focus too much on the design of a medium-sized building? Not to disparage that as a career choice, because it's obviously an important one, but I think there's a lot more to architecture than that, and I think that's been a common theme through a lot of the people, even at Arc Daily, that I talk to. Carlo Ratti or Liam Young are two good examples of that, of people who really believe in this cross-disciplinary kind of cross-pollination between architecture, art, science, technology, entertainment, all these different spheres that, as you say, all manifest in the built environment.
Yeah, definitely. So let's back up a little bit. You mentioned you're clearly a busy guy. You mentioned that you have a full-time job, BDP.
Yeah.
I was curious, were you working there at the same time or at a full-time job while you were still working with Arc Daily?
Yes, I was. To summarize it, I started at Arc Daily when I was in university. And so for a long time, the university schedule gave me the space to work at Arc Daily and for not to interfere too much. But there was an 8 or 9 month overlap where I was working full time at BDP and writing with Arc Daily. I mean, I was always very grateful to both of those places because they were both very flexible, and I think they both saw the advantage of me doing the other thing as well. But no, I won't deny it was difficult, and it is ultimately what led me to kind of step back and think maybe having one employer is enough for now. But
that didn't last long.
No, I became several employers of myself. But I think the only thing that kind of made it work was that Arc Daily, many of Arc Daily staff are based actually in the US, so the time difference kind of helped. Mm-hmm. In some ways, it was actually a lot of fun. Doing more than one thing puts all the other things in perspective, I think. Even working 8 hours a day with BDP, Arc Daily became an escape from that and from the stresses of that, and vice versa. So I won't deny that it was certainly difficult, but so I guess when you seek out things that you find interesting, you'll make it work somehow. And I certainly don't regret it. Ask me again in 10 years when I'm aged about 50 years, I might have a different answer, but for now, all good.
Yeah, that's funny. So let's talk a little bit about what you're doing now. What are some of the projects? You mentioned you had submitted for a contest. What was that about?
That's right. So the most recent contest, it was the brief was very open. It was an international ideas competition to rejuvenate and reuse a system of disused or abandoned tunnels, which were underneath a residential complex in China. There were a system of evacuation tunnels. I think there were 300 meters long, so they were quite substantial piece of infrastructure. And the brief was very simple. How do we transform these neglected spaces into places for people and places that people might use? So I drew a lot on my work from university, and in fact from my writing for Arc Daily, where I became very interested in urban farming and agriculture and the connection between agriculture and urbanism. I think the principal on that really is Carolyn Steele. So anyone who wants to know about urban farming, certainly check out her book, Hungry City, and she's done a few TED Talks. But my vision for these tunnels was to essentially create a 300 meter long farm, this environment which is kind of alive with production, which moves the means of production for agriculture back into cities, which can hopefully allow us to gain more of an understanding and appreciation of where food comes from. Because if you look at some of the, I won't rattle through all the statistics, but some of them can be quite alarming for the current state of agriculture, where I think we destroy 12 million hectares of rainforest every year to create farmland. At the same time, our current farming practices destroy 12 million hectares of farmland. So it's and I the looking at those tunnels and this abandoned or disused infrastructure, I guess it drew all these parallels in my mind of cities are very slowly being rotted, almost being rotted out from the core. We see more and more industries which used to take place in cities disappearing, whether that's retail, which I think is quite famous now for having struggles in city centers, and also increasingly now we're seeing with offices and with work. And that's not to mention all different transport industries, energy infrastructures, and water infrastructures, and transport infrastructures, which are they're becoming past their sell-by date. And the question of what do we use these spaces in the cities for, I think, is extremely exciting, because we do have all these industries which could take place, like food, like energy, like all these industries which are currently hidden from view, whether that's in a countryside or in a greenhouse, a sea of greenhouses in the Netherlands, that somehow cities could become places for production again, and places to celebrate production, and places where living in the city, it's as if you're not living in the city, you're living with the city. And that's where the inspiration for the urban farming came from. And I was fortunate enough to win that competition. But it did, I think, gave me a lot of confidence looking at the other entries, that a lot of other people also took that line, and they didn't try to celebrate these infrastructures as relics, which, sometimes that can be appropriate. Instead, they looked at these disused spaces and thought, how can we create an architecture of productivity rather than just an architecture of preservation or of archive? And so how can we create an active architecture? And I think that's always been something which has been underlined in my work, and certainly in a lot of the people that I encountered at, whether it's Arc Daily or BTP or anywhere.
Yeah. And I heard a insane stat recently that talked about, population growth. And when you think, I think it was just 1960, our population was 3 billion, just in 1960, and we're what, over just over 7 billion now. Just thinking on that trajectory of what population will be like in 2100, for example, we're going to have to accommodate and provide food for all those people. So as our cities get denser, you have to creatively think of how do we start to incorporate farming, because the pollution of transportation to bring all that food in has to come closer somehow. So how does all of that start to fold into one seamless, tighter network?
Absolutely. And it's as you say, I mean, I think the trajectory is for global population to reach 10 billion, I think, by 2060, or I could be wrong on that, but it's 10 billion within our lifetime. We'll see a world of 10 billion. I mean, I think the meat, our demand for meat and dairy is expected to double by 2050, which is alarming, because meat and dairy industry are among the world's largest polluters when you look at climate change. So there's a lot of questions that we have to face up to, not just because we're already overstretched in terms of how we produce food and how, and simply our relationship to food is almost non-existent. So there's one question about how do we, not only how do we prepare for a future world and future demands, but simply how do we meet the demands of the present? I've always believed that architecture and design and spatial thinking have a huge role to play in that. And it's always heartening to see I hear these kind of conversations, to hear that I think there's a lot of other people who believe the same thing. So I am cautiously optimistic that that we can, there are certainly challenges we can face, but they are challenges we have to face up to.
Yeah, definitely. So I want to spend the last couple minutes, I could talk with you for probably an hour or more, but let's spend the last few minutes. I wanted to catch your experience as a writer for architecture and sort of give people an insight of how did you get into it? How could someone get into it? And yeah, sort of the ups and downs of that career path.
Sure. Well, writing and reading, I think, has always been a passion of mine long before I had any sort of inkling to study architecture. And I think when the time came, I had a choice in my mind between studying journalism and studying architecture. Ultimately decided that journalism and writing could be woven into an architecture degree much easier than vice versa. I think looking back, it was the right decision. But I guess with the writing, like I never set out when I started architecture with the goal of writing for Arc Daily or anything like that. I think I was just looking for any excuse and any opportunity to write and to utilize the skills I felt I had. That I think often architects do themselves down and say that there aren't a lot of good architectural writers, which I don't know if that's true. But I mean, my advice for anyone who wants to follow a similar path is kind of the same thing. Use any opportunity you can to write about what you're passionate about. And there's a lot of websites and journals and publications which are always crying out for people. I know Arc Daily particularly does their internship program. I know other design websites do internships, paid internships, and are always looking for positions. And so I think my biggest advice is don't be afraid to approach the big leagues and don't be afraid of someone saying no, and don't be afraid to keep trying. And also to recognize that, as I think has been the theme of this talk, that architecture connects with so many other industries, and that anyone from an architectural background interested in writing shouldn't confine themselves to writing for an architectural publication. You see so many, whether it's National Geographic or The Guardian or so many other journals, that you see stories with an architectural spin, which garner huge intrigue from the general public. So I think my advice would be, look, you've nothing to lose. If you like writing, write, set up a blog and pitch your writing to anyone who you think will listen or read, I suppose. And of course, I get emails every so often, people looking for advice. I'm always happy to give advice to anyone as well who wants to learn more about, and who wants to learn more about writing or how I got into writing or anything. Just always feel free to find me somehow.
Great. Let's do one last opportunity for you to say anything that you want to get off your mind as a last comment for our listeners, and or let us know how we can stay in touch with you and follow along with what you're doing.
Sure. To get in touch with me, my Instagram handles is Niall Patrick Walsh, and my professional one is Architecture Words, so architecture_words. I'm sure people will find me on LinkedIn fairly easily. Even on Arc Daily, I think my email address is still on my biography page. And I guess in terms of a passing thought, I think that these kind of media platforms, I've always been very encouraged to see them grow, such as whether it's Spaces podcast or anything else. And particularly one of my biggest insights from Arc Daily was the encouragement and energy I got from seeing how eager readers, most of whom were architects, how eager they were to read about things that didn't directly relate to their profession. And I'd encourage anyone listening to to reflect and to recognize architecture's role in all these other industries, and that all the challenges we face, whether it's healthcare or climate or food or politics and inequality and diversity, all these different things that come into the world around us, that as architects you have a very large voice in those, and you have a background, you have a certain set of skills and expertise that others don't have, and try to use them for good, and to continue to engage where you can with platforms such as this, which connect like-minded people around the world, to continue this kind of conversation about how we can make a better built environment.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Niall. And just to clarify for our listeners, Niall is spelled N-I-A-L-L, Patrick Walsh. So thank you so much, Niall. And for our listeners, we will talk again on Tuesday. Thanks. This show is part of the Gable Media Network. You can check out similar content at gablemedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com. You can help support what we're doing here by leaving a 5-star rating and a review on your preferred podcasting app. It helps others find us, and your support is the only way that this show grows. And don't forget to connect with us through our Facebook community, Instagram, and see the random thoughts and articles that we share on Twitter and LinkedIn. Thank you again for spending some time with us. Talk soon.
Calling all AEC professionals. Get ready for unparalleled professional insights with Detailed, an original podcast by RCAT. This is the podcast that brings you the untold stories and lessons learned behind the design and delivery of a building project. Hey, it's Charisse Lakeside, aka the CSI Kraken, and your host. Join me as we dive deep into the tales of conflict, triumph, and sheer ingenuity.
Yeah, so when Serena was named for the, it was going to be named for the building, you know, we really were able to work with teams at Nike Branding and how to really infuse her influence and identity in the very public spaces.
Detailed features architects, engineers, builders, and manufacturers who spill the beans on the most complex, interesting, and downright odd building conditions they've encountered.
Another challenge of the shuttle is actually, and putting it in launch position, is how you brace that seismically. It's really supported by only two pins at the base of the booster rockets. And there's a large base isolator that's underneath the shuttle that kind of prevents it from moving too much in an earthquake.
When you have 600 people or 300 people in a room, acoustically, you really need a high floor to floor so that you can have the right acoustic environment for people to be able to talk, and that speech intelligibility is really good.
Every episode unveils lessons learned and connects you to the products you need to navigate similar challenges. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Detailed today and be prepared for the unexpected on your next project. Every building has a story, and we are here to tell it.